This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's show, we begin our lead up to the 2015 American Eventing Championships. We'll hear from Buck Davidson as he reflects on his win last year. But first, Rob Burke, the USEA Chief Operating Officer, offers a preview of what's being planned for the event at the Texas Rose Horse Park in September. The summer flies by, doesn't it, leading up to the AECs. So what's in store for us this year?
Last year, we had a lot of success with the 2014 AEC. A lot went right, and very, very little from an internal working standpoint went wrong. So we're very happy with how it went. And so running into this year, we've got a really good framework for how to run this year's event, but we're talking about adding to it. Mostly the additions are going to be in some updates of the cross country course. Captain Mark Phillips is again back and designing for us and has already laid out the track. This year our crew is actually going to get out there even earlier than they were last year. So we're excited about some of the surprises that will be in for our riders this year. Aside from that, entertainment-wise, we've got some really good ideas to go along with what we've done in the past. I know that the pro group will be back doing course walks for our riders. Those are open to the public, so anyone who wants to come and have a walk with some of the top riders in the entire sport can come do that. We'll have entertainment every single night with parties that range from young rider pizza parties to dog show to adult rider socials to our welcome party and our kind of large competitors party bash with live bands. And we'll be bringing back our bull riding tournament that was really popular last year. And our trade fair has only gotten bigger every year, complete with a beer garden. So we're extremely excited about this year, and it looks like this is going to be our last year in Texas, at least for the near future. So we really want to go out with a bang in Texas and do it right.
And no doubt you will, because as you say, you do tailor it, don't you, with the parties and everything. They theme them to the local culture.
We do, absolutely. It's we've especially with the music, the food, and you know, kind of the decor. It really is Texas on top of just red, white, and blue. The good thing about that is that the American Eventing Championships, the color theme can be red, white, and blue, and Texas state colors are red, white, and blue, so it makes it easy.
All right, and that's back at the Texas Rose Horse Park, as you said, in Tyler, Texas. September 24th to the 27th, then, this year, Rob.
That's right, yeah. Our welcoming party is on Wednesday the 23rd, and the event runs from the 24th to the 27th.
And we should remind everybody, if they're not familiar with these championships, that there is something at all levels, from beginner novice all the way to advanced, and it draws on people making that long trip all over the country, doesn't it, Rob? And that's the great thing about it. It's something like a festival, isn't it, really, in that sense?
Yeah, it really is. We've had representation over the last couple of years. I think last year we had 36 different states represented. We had folks from every corner of the country. It was, you know, that's one of the neat things about being in the center of the country. We get to see where in the past with some of our East Coast run AECs, we don't see as many of our West Coasters, but at the AEC in Texas, we've seen great representation. And I only expect that number to grow this year.
And you'll be bringing us updates, won't you, as we get closer to that date?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, we've got some really good awards coming back that I know we'll update you on throughout the year and any new additions we have coming on. And of course, we couldn't do any of this without our sponsors. We have an amazing roster of sponsors, which people can view online at useventing.com/AEC.
Right. I did want to mention those, of course, because the title sponsor is Neutrina again, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Neutrina is back on board with us, and our Attaquan Gold Cup Championship is, of course, sponsored by Attaquan. So It's again, I think we have something in the neighborhood of 40 different sponsors that have all they've given, whether it be product, financial support, they've really stepped up to make this. Everyone who places in the, especially in the top 10 at AAC, will walk away with a haul of goodies thanks to our amazing sponsors. And it's one of the most memorable things is the fact that just about everybody who gets a prize has to walk out with a golf cart load of of things. So.
Yeah, that's the great thing about the family of sponsors that you have. There are so many different products that they very kindly offer as well. We should mention the presenting sponsor again is VTO Saddlery, isn't it?
Yeah, we're excited to have VTO come back for the third year in a row, and they've also stepped up and they've been hosting our young rider and a party, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yes, well, as you said, the full list of all of those sponsors who have very kindly and generously given of their time and products and support financially to the AECs, they're all on the website where you can find more information, of course, about the event as it unfolds in the preparation. And Rob, we'll catch up with you, as I said, nearer the time to give us updates as to what we can expect. But we do know it's going to be a festival of fun and sport that week.
It will. So we'll expect entries to start rolling in on August 11th, and then we'll be able to really knock it out of the park this year.
Yes, it will be here before we know it. Well, we're going to hear from Buck Davidson now, who, of course, was a winner, big winner last year, and we get some advice from him also on his shipping protocols as well when you're traveling those long distances. All important, Rob. So we'll be featuring little things like this along the way through the summer as people prepare to visit the AECs this year.
Great. Thank you so much for doing this, Chris.
And now Buck Davidson joins us to share his thoughts on the event. Buck, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Chris.
You'll reflect on last year with a smile on your face, I'm sure, winning with the homebred mare Petite Flower. Just reflect on that for us a little bit, Buck, if you would, and really what that meant to you and to her in her career.
Well, I think, you know, if you can win any advance, that's, a feather in any horse's cap. And, of course, to win the American Betting Championships is a big deal, and there's a lot of prize money, and obviously that helps as far as the owners are happy. It helps keep the horse going down the road, and Mark set up a nice course there, and I think it was a really good experience to Flower, and I had a nice ride on Quasar in the intermediate. I was second there, so it was a good weekend, and hopefully we can repeat that again this year.
Well, absolutely. Do you think you will take the mare back again this time, Buck?
I don't know if it'll be Flower this year. I hope that I'll have something or a couple to go there. I'm not sure Flower will go back. She went very well in Kentucky, and so we'll just see. But she could be. You need a horse that's quick there. You obviously need a good show jumper, and she's both of those things. So, it's a long way to travel. So we wouldn't go with something that was less than very good. And I'm just not sure right at the moment which horse that would be.
Well, you mentioned there it is a long trip for anyone to go out to Texas for the championships, but clearly you've made it worth your while, not only bringing back the blue ribbon, but in terms of making the effort to put it into your schedule book, and you talked about there the specifics of what those courses require. Talk a little bit about more about that, Buck, because clearly that defines which horses you select to go and make that trip.
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, a person that does this for my career, we're always talking about having, more sponsorship and prize money and stuff like that. And so when Adequan can, put up that kind of money, I think we need to reward them and thank them by at the very least showing up. And, so that was sort of, my reasoning for going as much as anything. Yes, it's a little bit of an inconvenience, but just wanted to show my appreciation and thanks to the people that do so much for our sport. And in saying that, I have to do the right thing by the the people that own the horses for me. And, you know, it's a big financial commitment to go to Texas. And so I need to make it worth their while and, pick horses that can be successful. And, you know, thankfully last year, Flower and Quasar were both very successful. And, you know, that's important to me to, you know, anytime you put a horse on that long trip, you go with a purpose and you don't just go to take part, you go to win. And, you know, so that will be definitely in the future something or what I think about. But I also want to know, or I want the sponsors to know, that we really appreciate what they do for us. And just a little thank you is to just go and show up and try to do the best we can possibly do.
And of course, one of the things you'll want to take away from every competition is that horse's confidence to continue their career. You look at those tracks, you look at the requirements on the day, and coming into that competition, you know, the form of that horse. What would you say you took away from there that was helpful for this particular horse, Caroline Martin's Petite Flower, last year, Buck?
Well, I mean, I think it's a very, very good course. It's a course that, you know, it's not the hardest advanced or the hardest intermediate that we'll do all year, but it has a little bit of everything. It has the ditches, has the corners, it has triple brushes, whatever. But they can be taken, you know, an easier, softer line to them. But if you want to be competitive and you want to, you know, try to win, you've got to take some chances and jump across some of the corners and stuff like that. So I think he's done a good job in making it a course that everybody can be successful at, whatever degree they choose. If you choose to, you know, give your horse a nice educational round, well, you can do that. And if you have one, like I was lucky enough to have in Flower last year, that has had a bit of experience, I could take a little bit more chance and, you know, take on some of the corners a little bit more, you know, at some more acute angles and things like that, and, you know, push myself and push her. And, you know, fortunate enough, it worked out. And I think that, you know, it's certainly no secret that she hasn't been super reliable. But, you know, I think it was maybe the start of her getting reliable. And, you know, hopefully we'll be better. And, you know, I know we've been better this year, and hopefully we'll continue to grow into next year.
Well, you mentioned the trip. Of course, that's something to prepare for as well, because you want the horses to arrive in peak condition and not lose anything in the journey. But so for the benefit of our wider audience here, a lot of the amateurs who are thinking they'll make their trip to the AECs, perhaps for the first time, and are going to have a long road trip, give us some tips, if you would, about preparing a horse for that kind of journey. And do you stop over? Do you rest in any way? Or do you drive straight through? Give us some idea what that looks like for you and your team.
Yeah, I mean, for me and my horses, I think it's about a 30-hour drive, roughly. It's very important that my horses have a lot of air in the trailer. You know, the most dangerous situation for a horse is for them to get overheated. So I put them in big stalls, and I open up all the windows, and they have lots of air going through. And I think it's easier for the horse to go straight through. You know, I'm fortunate to have a truck that has sleeping or living in it, and so I put two drivers in it, and they just switch back and forth, and we hung water buckets and hay nets, and you know, drove, and you know, tried to do the worst part of the, you know, where it would be the hottest in the evening and in the night, and you know, when if it got unbearable or whatever, and as we went and stopped for gas and things like that, we took horses' temperatures and paid attention to how much water they drank and how much, you know, hay they'd eaten. And, you know, they arrived early so they could settle in, and, you know, took their temperatures three times a day, make sure that nobody had any fevers or anything like that, monitored all their, you know, drinking and eating. And, you know, I flew down a couple days later, and they were ready to go. So I just gave them a couple of easy days once they first arrived, let them hack and eat grass, and they were all, you know, both my horses and Andrea's horse were you know, felt just like it was any other event. But I think you just want to make sure you just monitor the horses the way you normally do and make sure that their temperatures and everything looks right, and they'll be fine.
And you mentioned you hang water buckets for them so that they can drink ad lib on the whole journey.
Yeah, I just think that it's, you know, if you only give them water when you stop, it's almost like you're forcing them to drink. And, you know, as we all know, when we're driving a car, it's not like we just get to drink and then we drink it all down and then it's gone. You kind of put it in the cup holder and you need to drink a little bit. You put it down, you might not touch it for a couple hours. And you need another sip. And I think the horses are exactly the same. So if I can make it so that I just hang the water up and they can drink when they choose, then I think it's better for them.
How about electrolytes? Do you advocate using electrolytes for the travel, Buck?
I do. I feed my horses a supplement called Total Control, which is a finish line product that has electrolytes in it, and I put that in their feed, and before they go, and then once they arrive there, I don't actually give them hard feed as they're shipping. I just think that can be risky, and that they can eat all the hay they want. And we had absolutely no problem. And then, you know, once they went back onto their hard feed, when they arrived there, they, you know, got their Total Control and had the electrolytes and all their supplements in it. And they performed as good or better than they normally do.
And would they have their own hay throughout the competition, Buck, or just for the journey?
No, they would have their own hay. I would pack all my own hay. I would take all my own feed. I want to keep everything as close to what we do at home, in Texas as we would in Pennsylvania. And so the horses have no change. The only difference is they're in a different state, but they have a big, nice trailer to drive in. They just like going to another horse show for them.
Right. And would they work the day before you leave, Buck? Is that an easy day, or is it a work day for them?
Yeah, no, I would tend to work them the day they left, but I would try not to get them all hot and sweaty. And, you know, I would definitely, again, try to keep them as much in the routine as they're used to. And I would generally work the horses before they got on the truck to go to an event. And but I would, again, sort of be a bit sympathetic that they're about to take a big trip. And I wouldn't want them to lose a lot of sweat or whatever. And so I would give them a nice, you know, I call it a massage dressage, and you just sort of stretch them and relax them and soften them up, but not push on them too hard. And again, like I said, try to keep everything as close to what they normally do as possible.
And when they come off the trailer at the other end, then Buck, do they get to go for a walk no matter what time of day or night they arrive? They get a walk, do they, before they go in the stall?
Their stalls will be set up. Their hay and water will be put in. I'd probably put them in the stalls for a minute or so, because they're probably going to have a roll, and make sure that the stalls are well bedded, and the banks are up so that if they do roll, they don't get cast. And just sort of let them take a deep breath for a second, and then take them out for a hand graze, and probably give them a bath, and and then put them back in their stalls and let them maybe eat a little bit of food, and then probably give them an hour or two, and then take them out again for another half an hour hand graze, and let them just relax again, maybe give them another bath or a brush or whatever. And it's in the evening, and you probably put them up for the night, and the next day they're ready to go.
Right, and clearly you monitor their droppings and whether they're stale during the journey. Do you find that they do, Buck? I mean, is that a concern, that their liquid intake is enough, so that when they get off, they probably go in their stall and want to stale pretty soon anyway, do they?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you just want to monitor everything with the horse. So, if their manure is hard or soft, if that's not normal for them, then you need to make a mental note of it. And, if I know a horse is notoriously not a good drinker or whatever, I would certainly not be afraid to give them, give them fluids before they left, or fluids when they arrived. That's a very easy, safe thing to do. And, the one thing about it is if they don't need the fluids, all they're going to do is pee them out. But if they do need them, then they're there. So certainly, you know, like the horse, like Reggie, before he gets on the truck, he always gets fluids. That's just kind of part of his deal. So if I was worried about it, or I was coming from a really hot climate, or I knew that it was going to be really hot in Texas or whatever, then I might give them some fluids before they got on the truck. And when I got there, if I felt like they were dehydrated, I'd get the vet to give them fluids once I got there.
Right. Now, what about carrots and apples, though, Buck? Is that something you let them have? I know a lot of people do think, well, that's harmless. They enjoy it, and it's just liquids after all, mostly water content. Is that something you let them have during a journey or not?
I mean, I'm not really too worried about that. You know, if you want to give them an apple or carrot, I'm sure it's probably fine. But, you know, I would rather, you know, just get, you know, have the horse, you know, eat his hay, eat his water, or drink his water. And, you know, I guess I don't really feed him apples and carrots on, you know, going to a normal event. So I tend to probably not do it. Once I get to the show, then I would, you know, then I give them, you know, some apples or carrots or something to make them, you know, if they're a little bit fussy about eating or whatever, I would, you know, give them something to make it more enticing to them. And I would also, when I fed them the first, you know, first few times, I wouldn't give them all their feed at one time. I would just give them little bits. First of all, horses, if you throw too much feed at them, tend to you know, push it away. But at the same time, if they're overly hungry, you don't want them to just, you know, suck down the food too fast. So I would tend to give them, you know, put their hard feed back in a little bit slowly and over, you know, four or five feedings rather than three.
And finally then, Buck, just tell us what you use for clothing for them. Do you put anything on their back? And what about the legs? Just standard wraps? Do they have a pole guard? Give us an idea of what you expect them to travel in.
I would definitely, I mean, the AC's in the summer. And like I said, the most dangerous situation for a horse is, you know, when they get overheated on a trailer. So I certainly would not give them, you know, I certainly would not put any clothing on them. And I do, for a long trip like that, I would put shipping boots on. I wouldn't put wraps, because I hate when they twist, and every time that the trailer stopped to get gas or whatever, the horses would be checked, make sure the boots were in the right place. But one thing I don't do on the long trips is I don't put tail wraps, because over that long a time, if the pressure's too tight on the tail wrap, you know, the horse can actually lose his tail. And, you know, and if it's too loose, well, it's just going to fall off anyway. So over that long period of that long a trip, I actually don't put tail wraps. So that's probably the only thing that's different from a, you know, a regular trip for them. If it's sort of over 10 hours or so, I really don't put tail wraps on them. So that's really the only difference.
All right. Well, obviously, a trip that's worthwhile for you, and we look forward to welcoming you back to the Texas Rose Horse Park this summer, Buck. And obviously, you'll be wanting to pick up that blue ribbon again, as competitive as ever. So we'll have to watch out for which horses you bring.
Exactly. You know, hopefully there's a couple in there that want to go and win the blue ribbon, but more importantly, win the check.
All right, make it well worthwhile. Pay for that gas. All right, Buck. Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program, and the best of luck at the AECs this year.
All right, thanks, Chris.
And don't forget to check the website at useventing.com for regular updates about the event. And whilst you're there, you can keep up to date with the latest horse and rider rankings too, as well as all the very latest news on the website at useventing.com. This podcast is available as a free subscription in the iTunes podcast store. Just look for USEA and download the podcast to your smartphone or tablet apps such as Podbean or Stitcher. Until the next time, thanks for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.